Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast. My name is Michael Bailey, I'm with sports desk Peter Raven and chief Norwich City correspondent for the Eastern Daily Press, Paddy Davitt, to chew quite a lot of cud this week. We have, of course, got the Leeds defeat to talk about. There's Peter and Michael interviews, the state of the nation with Alec Neil and what have you. Everything was okay when I left for my holiday, and now I've come back, it seems like the wheels have fallen off. Well, are you okay, Pad? You look, you're yawning. It's been a tough weekend. Did it feel like a tough weekend?
Bored of it all, basically. no more tougher than Brighton. That was pretty rocky ride, but sadly didn't get the reaction they wanted. So, it's going to be a long fortnight now, I fear. But what we do know, he referenced the media done by the owners that at the other end of the international break, the manager will still be in place. So if nothing else, it calms that one down, because I could do without a daily bulletin. Is he still here? Is he still here? He will be here. And it's up to him now. You know, how many games he's got, that'll be dictated by the results, ultimately. That's what you live and die by if you're in his position now. And didn't make a good start against Leeds.
No. Well, cards on the table then. I mean, after Brighton, I felt it's a case of when rather than if now for Alec Neil. I think this is very, it's so often, I think you mentioned this earlier today as well, Pab, when we're at our desk, it's so hard for a manager to turn this sort of atmosphere around. Doesn't mean that it doesn't happen, but it is so hard to do it when you have some of the fans on his back. I mean, Chris Hughton lasted about a year after the fans first started trying to get to when it eventually unraveled. How do you see it, Pete?
I think it's when you do start to lose section of the crowd, it then doesn't turn out. Even if he now goes and wins the next four or five, the element's still going to be there that when he does slip up again, it's then going to come to the surface. It's crazy though, isn't it? It's like from manager of the month to 3 weeks later, he's just, like you say, it's a when rather than if. It's but no, the crowd is starting to turn. Oh, you saw that on Saturday, didn't you? It's at the end of the game, quite a few boos and ironic cheers. I think was it, you've only scored three, there's a chance to lead. So,
yes.
And it's, you could tell on Saturday that the players, it's, I don't know if it's fear or that sort of petty little squabbles and in team arguing they're having on the pitch. Apparently there's no cliques, but that wasn't a team out there on Saturday. That was a group of players that just weren't doing it for the manager, if for anyone really. It's, no, it won't be much longer, I don't think.
I mean, let's be honest, that's my opinion I'm giving, and I'm sure there are fans out there listening to this who probably don't agree with it, and people who think that he needs the time. As you mentioned, the certainly the majority shareholders at the moment feel like they would love to give him all the time he needs to sort it round. And, you know, some of those players are 2 years older than when they went up last time. They maybe still haven't got it. Maybe the playing squad also needs a serious overhaul at some point.
Yeah, but when, how are you going to do that? You know, he's got to go with the players he's got now, and if he hasn't got the right players, and that's an indictment on what they did in the summer, effectively. I mean, mitigation, he's got some key players injured, you know, Johnny Howson being the key one, obviously. Tete was suspended, wasn't he, Saturday, but ultimately the lads he had on the pitch, it's not working. Why he persists with Pritchard, Wes and Dorans in the same midfield, I do not know. And it's almost stubbornness now and obduracy, and the substitutions again, he's caught out with that, and the wrong side of that. It's the same failings week in, week out, and you know, maybe he's reached the point where all managers do, even the top ones, where, you know, it's just whatever you do, you just can't seem to get yourself out of that rut. And you know, if he's in that state of mind now, then it won't be long now, sadly. So, you know, ultimately, he's got to win football matches, particularly with the expectation on Norwich having just come out of the Premier League. They're a million miles away at the minute, a million miles away from getting anywhere near to getting back to the Premier League. And we'll use a quote that he came out with after Saturday. Buck stops with him. Ultimately, if Norwich City are unable to win a game in three defeats on the spin, isn't it, in the league? They drew the previous one with Fulham. Went out of the League Cup in rather ridiculous circumstances, shipping goals like there's no tomorrow, you know, can't seem to score enough goals. It's like there's so many leaks in the dam now, and it's very hard to see how he can plug them all, basically.
And I think it is quite easy to look at it and think it has turned around so quickly. But I guess what we've had is a lot of issues that have been around for a long period of time. If you take from the point, effectively, Norwich were in the Premier League, things like being one of only a handful of sides to lose at Aston Villa in a complete no-show, to not turn up at Bournemouth, to be in a position where you could be 7 points clear of the drop zone and you get done at home to Sunderland by not playing Nathan Redmond. I know I don't want to rake over old ground, but they're all issues that linger when you get to the point where the wheels come off in the Championship. And we look at it now, Norwich have won 8 games. 7 of those games have been against the bottom 7 sides as the Championship stands this international break.
Well, you speak to people in the office who support other teams, it's like, what are you on about getting rid of your manager, you're 4th? It's like, but we've seen it all season that there's something underlying there that's not right. And like you say, we've played the bottom 7, that's where our 7 wins have come from. And I think it was our best start to a season in 20 years. And I think but now it's more sort of a points tally that Neil Adams' side had when we were in the Championship. It's never felt quite right. And the atmosphere at Carrad all season has never been bouncing. And the victories there have been, you just sort of skinning your teeth. You think, well, how do we get away with winning that one? But the thing is, if we can all see it, then surely the board and the management can see it as well.
It depends what their aims are, and maybe we'll get on to that.
Yes, well, we're winning games, but you're now, 10 points behind Newcastle when you go back to that night when we were looking to go top of the league and then be 6 or 7 ahead of them. Ever since then, is that they're a team that's gone down and are going to bounce straight back up. But you look at Norwich, yes, they're 4th, but they're just slipping away.
Tell you, 10 points to Newcastle, 7 points to Brighton. And Brighton, I think, notched the most points. Certainly, it was one of the highest tallies not to go up automatically in the top 2 last season. And they're probably a better side now than they were last year too, because they've added a couple of key figures to all that. So yeah, not very pretty. We should probably, and you touched on the team selections, Paddy. The big one, and I know you said you were sort of conversing on Twitter about this before kickoff, was the goalkeeper, Michael McGovern, being given the nod again ahead of John Reddy. I mean, we look at the third goal, are we all agreed that he should have saved that, regardless of maybe he wasn't quite sighted or what have you, and it was quite well struck?
Yeah, of course he should have saved it. Yeah, he's an absolute howler on the back of culpable for probably 3 goals at Brighton. That's, I think, where to follow on from Pete's point about the crowd and the frustration. I'd imagine a lot of that is fueled from the decision from a manager to retain McGovern when you've got Ruddy on the bench. It's just, there's no real base. I don't see the basis for it. You know, you're not telling me Ruddy wouldn't command his area better than McGovern at the minute. Now, John Ruddy probably, let's be honest, isn't the keeper he was, but then, you know, eventually players go over the other side. But I think he's still, in this current climate, going to be more reliable than McGovern. And for him to retain McGovern at the start on Saturday, I think immediately then puts fans offside, basically, because, you know, it's tantamount to, oh, well, I'm going to do it my way and I'm going to go down this route and I'm not really going to take on board what anybody else is going to think. Now, that's fine on one level because, as we saw in the first 5 or 6 months when he came here, I think that single-mindedness was just what Norwich needed, because clearly there was issues within the changing room, hence Neil Adams wasn't able to sort of galvanise them. So to have this almost, I'm coming in, this is the way it is, you fall in behind me or you'll be on the sidelines, that was perfect at that moment. But I think now he's almost like he feels he probably needs to placate too many elements in the changing room rather than just maybe taking advice from those around him a bit more. You know, I'm getting a bit sick and tired of this sort of mother's meeting on the touchline every second half when Irving and McAvoy have to come out and they have to have a big confab, and meanwhile the game continues to career away from them. You know, it just seems to be very muddled mindset and symptomatic of a lack of self-confidence, I think, within the management group, and that's obviously translated into the players now.
I can't remember if it was the equaliser or the goal that gave Leeds the initial comeback lead, But certainly there was one of those meetings going on while that goal was scored. And then obviously the substitution was made right after or just before kickoff when the game restarted, which was something that used to drive me absolutely spare last season. But there we go. Do we have a quick word on Leeds? Dirty Leeds, as you like to call them, Pete? Yeah. Were you impressed with them? Is that the wrong thing to ask?
I was impressed with, well, the away fans in terms of the atmosphere they created. Not their behaviour, as always. Bit of bother outside the ground before, maybe after, and one or two choice chants that you get from them, but they're loud. And they go in numbers, and Carrow Road was silent. Their number 8 team, is it Janssen?
Pontus Janssen?
Yeah, he impressed. Well, both of his goal and at the back, he's just a unit, isn't he? He's like made Cameron Jones look like Wes. It's as a team, I don't know, what are they now? Fifth?
Sixth.
A point behind Norwich.
Yeah. No great shakes, but again, you can see they were playing as a team and Norwich weren't, and they were just solid and a typical Championship team full of brutes.
Norwich had taken the lead. We should go through a couple of the finer details. Are we giving the goal to Robbie Brady? Is it still Robbie Brady's goal at the moment, Pad, or do we own goal? What did we? What? Because it seemed to be a bit of a mixed match.
No, it's it was. I think it floated past the post and then over the line and gone in. It came off his back rather than his head, didn't it? So,
I think it was an own goal personally because I think Robert Green was saving it and then it came off Ayling. But Pad, what did you give it as?
Well, I mean, all established outlets said Brady, 24th minute, so until I'm told different.
Like it was going in anyway, it's just going to float into that far corner. Green wasn't going to get it. So.
It's not the Premier League, no one cares anymore. and Leeds got back, and Janssen, as you said, certainly impressed me, although he did look like Beckenbauer when he's bringing the ball up out of defence at one point in the second half. Great header. Most culpable part in terms of Norwich's defending that Cameron Jerome completely left his man and therefore he had a free header. Louis Thompson being on the line yet not being tall enough to head it. Clear.
He didn't slip, he just wasn't tall enough. He
seemed to mistime it. He seemed to jump forward.
He was never going
to
get that ball. Which is a shame because he's the one glimmer of hope from that game. He was a standout performer. Had we had 11 Louis Thompsons on the pitch, we might have won, but sadly we only had one.
Okay, there's two things. I mean, there's the defending for the goal, but there is also Louis Thompson did do very well. He was one of the few players to burst forward and show a bit of energy, but was that mostly a sad indictment of the players around him as much as how well Louis did?
Yes.
Yeah, how great.
Back. I mean, there's a couple of times where sort of sliding tackles that came in that could have otherwise made it 4 or 5 to Leeds.
He did, but then the defence looked so exposed for a lot of the time. Even when they were leading in the first half, Paddy, they were just looked like a defensive shambles. They were so exposed and they looked genuinely like they would concede every time Leeds broke forward. And this was supposed to be, as I said at the start, the big reaction from what happened at Brighton.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was a case of, you know, did they run about, did they show some effort, because they did. But fundamentally, I think he's got the balance of that team wrong. You cannot, in this current rut they're in, playing against decent, well-drilled sides, the midfield is wrong. The balance of the midfield is wrong. As soon as that ball goes to the opposition, the defence is then ultimately, because you only got Louis Thompson with any instincts to try and get back the other side of the ball. I mean, how many times are Russell Martin exposed? What the hell is Robbie Brady doing in front of him in that first half? All the time they were going down the left-hand side. You know, Wes, sorry, people, we know defensively that's not his forte. And yet, Dorans as well. Dorans is in there to retain possession and get them higher up the pitch. Well, what is he in the side for? Because they're not doing that at the minute. I just don't understand, irrespective of injuries and what options he's got. Fundamentally, he should be able to see that. If we can see it, what do we know? We're not football people. We're not inside the game. But it's so clear that the balance of that team is wrong. And that's why, even if they'd got a point through Lafferty, they wouldn't have deserved it. Leeds were the better side from start to finish. And that, I think, is where the frustration lies, is that, you know, it's not a case of... I don't think it is effort. I don't think it is that they're just wandering about. It's just that he hasn't got the right mix of players. And you talk about defensively, true, but they're getting exposed because they haven't got a midfield in front of them that are offering them any sort of protection. And conversely, because they don't have the ball and they're not able to sort of get themselves at the pitch, Jerome is just basically an isolated figure. So, you know, as I said earlier, it's not one thing, it's multiple things, and whether he can turn that around in sufficient time and start getting positive results, I have my doubts.
We've mentioned the third goal from Ronaldo Vieira, who of course scored the decisive penalty in the EFL Cup game as well. Lucky boy. So obviously that name is paying off. Apparently his brother, he's got a twin brother called Romario. Did we know that? Romario Vieira as well. I mean, those parents were having a laugh, weren't they? But, you know, fair play. They are actually talented boys. Great strike, brother, goalkeeper, etc. The second goal he scored was well worked, actually. There were a few lacking tracking runners there. I mean, Pritchard kind of left his man. Martin Olsen got done. It was nicely, neatly worked. Credit to Leeds and Chris Woody finished it.
Yeah, but again, you've left the guy who scored 10 this season completely unmarked in the box. Easiest goal he'll score all season.
And of course, Carl Lafferty, as you mentioned, Pad, who came on. I mean, the idea of Carl Lafferty coming on because Alec Neil needed someone to give him a boost in his job. I just can't cry for the irony, but he took it really well, I thought. Where on earth does that lead us now? Because, you know, he did something that some other strikers haven't looked like doing a lot of. I mean, he's not going to start Carl Lafferty at QPR next in a fortnight's time, is he? So
you wouldn't have thought so, no. I mean, what's Nelson Oliveira hanging around the place for? You know, what is he, just basically an adornment or what? I don't know why. This is what I'm saying. I mean, basically, it's all symptom. You can all tie the strands together, and it's got basically a manager who doesn't really know what he needs to be doing now, and that's the saddest part of it, really. That he's gone from this kind of bullish, you know, kind of making the right calls most of the time, to now he's gone the other way now, where he seems to be, you know, reticent to make any decisions, and the ones he's making are the wrong ones. So, you know, it's a fairly simple equation. If you get more right than wrong, then you'll stay in a job and you'll probably have success. If it goes the other way, then the outcome's fairly inevitable, I would suggest.
OK, well, we have an interview with Graham Dorans. I think he mentions the word fight and together quite a lot. Here you go.
Graham, sum up the mood after that. That must be bitterly, bitterly disappointing.
Yeah, we are. I mean, everyone in there is disappointed. The last couple of weeks hasn't been good enough. And we spoke during the week about this was a chance to put things right. And I thought the boys worked hard out there, but it's a difficult result to take. It's probably not good enough for conceding too many goals at the minute, and conceding another three today, so disappointing.
There's been a lot of talk about you guys offering a reaction off the back of Brighton. It didn't come, did it?
I thought we worked hard. I mean, everyone out there gave 100%. I don't think anyone gave up, but it just wasn't good enough. As I said, we're conceding too many goals, and we're going at half time, we're leading again, and we managed to throw it away like many times we've done this season. So yeah, everyone in there is disappointed. I'm running a fight at the minute.
And defensively, you've been working on that for a week or two now, haven't you? You had a full week at it today. I mean, how does that turn around from here? Because it doesn't seem like what's been worked on has worked so far.
I think we've been working on it not just this week. We've been working on it as a team. It's not just the defence we're talking about. It's defending as a whole unit, a whole squad. But it's not been good enough. We're conceding too many goals at the minute. And how we change that, I don't know. And obviously need to go and work on the training pitch and put it right, and hopefully we can do that.
There was some pressure on the manager before this afternoon. Imagine a result like this might up that a bit. How do you guys see that situation?
It's football. Obviously, we've not had the results the last couple of weeks. The fans aren't happy, but we have to stick together. We'll have to fight, and say we'll have a long 2 weeks now before the next game. But as I said, we're in a fight, and hopefully we can stick together and come through it.
And the players are still behind the manager and what he's trying to do as well?
Yeah, 100%, yeah. I mean, we're a squad, we'll fight it together, we're all in it together. We're as much as to blame as the manager. We're the guys out there, it's not getting the results and not getting the performances. So yeah, we're all in it together.
Thanks, Graham. Thank you.
Cheers, thank you.
So it was slightly curious in that we had, I think there was a chat with Jez Moxie that BBC Radio Norfolk got before kickoff that went out. I haven't actually had a chance to listen to what he said yet, but I'm not sure where it all stands now that the game's passed. And the interview with Delia Michael that marked their 20th anniversary went in the Times. I think it was something the Times have been chasing for a while and got. So Pete, you've been around following the club for years and years. I guess the key headlines were you know, Delia would love to keep a manager for 10 years because obviously they're nice people. They don't want to have to sack people. And they have not listened, would not listen to anyone who would want to come and buy the club. Regardless, Tom Smith will be the man bestowed their shares when the time is right.
The line about the manager isn't a surprise. She's said that about Worthington, Houghton, most of them really, that she wants them. They're never given a proper chance in football these days. So, say she wants Alex Neil for 10 years is no shock. It's not going to happen. But
well, she just wants her manager for 10 years. Yeah, it probably doesn't even matter who it is.
the line that I picked out was this one about that we're not going to sell, we're not even listening to offers. I mean, that's what we weren't told in the past by various AGMs that, I mean, likes of McNally and Barricott have mentioned that we've put the club out there, but there's been no offers. So unless that's now changed now that McNally's gone, I guess he was brought in to do most of her dirty work and the stuff that she didn't want to be associated with.
Day-to-day work, I think, yeah.
No, but actually to have someone who wasn't exactly university liked but dragged the club up from League One. So a lot of the interview is what you'd expect to hear from. It's just a bit, I'm not sure you want to hear from an owner that we're not prepared to sell. It's like, why aren't you listening to offers? There's a reason that most of the clubs in the Premier League are owned by billionaires, because you need to be these days.
I think, I mean, I've read about this today, and to me it's the arrogance of not even listening. Whether there have been offers or not, which is probably a different question, but to not even listen if there are inquiries is arrogant, because you are assuming there is no possible better option out there than you. That is it. That is straightforward. And she says herself, the fans probably won't like this. But if you're stewarding the club for the fans, everything has to come in the best interest of the fans and of the club. I mean, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. They might disagree. But it's all interesting stuff. Pad, I mean, what did you make of it when you read it all?
Yeah, well, like Pete says, I don't think there was anything too revelatory in there. And I'll take your point as well. Yeah, ultimately they are custodians. You know, as much as they clearly do care about the football club, and they are fans of the football club, ultimately, that should be the only real criteria, is what's right for the football club. And to sort of almost shut down that avenue does seem rather strange. But I think the reality is, I don't think, from what I would understand, there hasn't been offers, because that created the wrong impression that there'd been a queue of foreign owners trying to get into the bowels of Carr Road, and they've been basically told to go away. So I think we need to be a bit careful about that. But as you say, hypothetically, if there were potential parties out there who were interested, then I think any ownership would be remiss not to actually listen to them. So, but ultimately, they own the shares, they're the majority shareholders, and it isn't their club in that sense, because the club belongs to the fans, because it is about the fans. But you know, it's them calling the shots. So for the time being, if that's the route they want to go down, then that's the route the club will go down.
No, they call themselves the stewards of the club. No issue with that at all. I mean, all I would add then is, you know, if this doesn't go as well as everyone wants it to, and Norwich have to spend two or three seasons in the Championship, and we get someone saying there's no one with a blank checkbook at the end of the season to write anything off, we know that that's a conscious decision, not a sob story, because that's how they wanted to do it. So, it's the international break. Everyone's going to play some international football and no one will care. But QPR is back on the other side of it. QPR, who sacked Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank late on Saturday night, wasn't it? I think the Channel 5 Football League show was in progress while the sacking was made. Extraordinary stuff. And that does Norwich no favours, really, does it, Pete? I struggle to think of when that's a good thing. And Norwich really needs something out of the Loftus Road.
Yeah, I think whoever if they've brought someone in on... Yeah, I don't know, but you would assume there'll be someone in place by then, and it's all this new manager syndrome, isn't it? So, yeah, that's another 0 points.
That's the way. There was a club appointing a new manager, of course, over the weekend. That came through at full-time at Carrow Road. Wolves, Paul Lambert.
Yeah,
that's going to be interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, I've heard of him. Yeah, he's
a big fan, aren't you,
Paddy? He's all right, yeah, but I'll be brutally honest. I was delighted not to see him wander back through the doors here. For no other reason than I think, you know, I don't think he's basically the manager he was. So he might prove us wrong at Wolves, but I don't see that ending in success. So good luck.
Yeah, I had to write something for a Graham for something on a couple of questions on Paul Lambert, and you're sort of saying, recalling these things of how good Paul was here, but it just doesn't marry into what's happened since. So it's going to be fascinating to see what happens at Molineux.
It was always the trio here, wasn't it? Yeah. And I'm guessing those two won't be joining him at Molineux. No. It's off what happened at Villa. And he was never going to come back here anyway. So.
But then they stopped being a trio because it wasn't working at Villa, didn't they? If it was just the trio, it would have worked at Villa when they all moved in. But maybe the fact that they were still in the Premier League meant it was working. Who knows? It's Aston Villa. Anything else we need to touch on? Roy Hodgson was at Carrow Road on Saturday, guest of Michael and Delia, him and Roy and his wife. They're all family friends, have been for years, and I think they were quite desperate to make the point that there's nothing to read into the fact that they'd been invited. Long-standing agreement. There you go. Is there anything else we need to say? Anything else anyone wants to say? Pad?
See you next week.
Sounds fine. Will we though? Well, might not.
Murphy's tied up yet or still ongoing?
That was in the Dealey Smith Michael Wynne Jones interview. I can't remember which of the two said it, but the Murphys will sign new contracts, I think.
The word hopefully was in the quote. if we want to be brutally accurate, I think hopefully was in that quote, I think.
Fingers crossed.
A lot of people that are backing Alex Neil is, if we do get rid of him, who replaces him?
That's a good point. Good debate,
Pete. Who's out there?
Do we have that now or do we wait?
Up to you.
Well, have you got an initial name on the top of your tongue? Shakes his head.
Not really, no.
No. Mark Warburton would possibly... I heard someone else mention that today. I think it was between him and Alec when Alec was originally appointed. But obviously he's still at Rangers, isn't he? Is he still at Rangers?
Yeah.
Just about.
He's already leave Rangers for Norwich.
Why would he? Norwich are a far better prospect than Rangers, my man. This is the Rangers of the new co.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah.
they're never going to topple Celtic anytime soon. So
there you go, Warburton then.
Right, well, that was easy. Paddy, do you feel like you want to answer that question? Or
what
like people on a short list? Or, wow, it seems very hard. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, there's not talking about him, but he's still got a job.
Yeah, it does feel a bit like that.
But then that's the argument. It's like, if you get rid of him, who replaces him? And it's difficult to think, who would you want in charge?
Yeah, it's a good call, yeah. I mean, ultimately, I don't think it's quite clear they're not going to have millions to spend in January, so this argument that gets trailed, that their new man, hypothetically, would need to be in place to do what they need to do in a window... Not sure that really holds a lot of water, because the financial reality is they won't be able to do a lot in the window. So it's effectively this squad, bar one or two maybe tweaks in January, I feel. So it's who could potentially get a tune out of this group of players, and that's ultimately why Alex Neil is under pressure now, because he isn't getting the maximum out of this set of players. I think nobody would contest that at the minute. Now, whether they're cliche alert, the best squad in the Championship, or one of the best, I don't think they are at the minute, but certainly they're better than fifth and three defeats on the spin. So I don't know, honestly don't know. You know, if he goes, then you would hope Moxie, given his experience, would have some sort of succession planning ready to go.
I just think of all the things Alec Neil said when he first came into the job here, and how they'd probably all apply if he was to take over himself now. It's just a funny old situation. So quickly how it's changed around. But anyway, maybe Alec will do something that sets him apart and get a tune out of them. They've got a trip to QPR, then a trip to Derby, who are in a bit of form now. And Bradley Johnson's playing regularly, I notice now, under Steve McLaren. Then it's Brentford at Carrow Road, December the 3rd. How exciting. Right, we should wrap this up. We're not running the Alec Neil poll this week, are we? Why, do you want to say why not, Pete?
Yeah, Ipswich fans got in there and voted for him to stay. They weren't even subtle to go for one of the other options. They just went, oh, what a moon.
It's
either one kid in his bedroom voting 6,000 times, or 6,000 Ipswich fans. Are there 6,000 Ipswich fans? Nothing else better to do on a Sunday evening.
We are sure they're Ipswich fans, and there's not this silent majority of Norwich fans.
The evidence is there that our friends from Suffolk have got the internet.
Which was, of course, the poll as to how long you would give Alec Neil. We ran it last week, and what, 28%, wasn't it, said they'd want him to go. Everyone else gave Alec Neil some degree of time, from a month to as long as he needs. I guess we'll see now what happens. Right, let's wrap this up. Paddy, Pete, thank you so much. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can get in touch, all the usual means, and we'll be back probably after the QPR game. Although, you know, you never know, we might do one beforehand. You know, break the mould.
Nothing happens between then and now.
No, it won't, Pete. It won't. And on that note, goodbye.